All right, welcome to the Burning River Radio Baseball Podcast number two, an unnamed podcast. It went swell last week. I'm Justin Ladd with Joe Koblitz, the editor of Burning River Baseball. How's it going, Joe?
It's going great.
It's getting warmer where you are, and it's getting colder where I am.
No, it's freezing. It was so cold today down at practices. It was 40 degrees when I left my house this morning. Sorry.
Yeah.
It felt like
It should be warmer down there now than it is here because it's starting to get pretty cold.
Yeah, but I'm hoping. I mean, tomorrow it's going to be a crisp one. The spring training opener is Saturday. That's essentially tomorrow from what we're recording today.
No one's going to listen to this to bitch about the weather, so let's talk about baseball that some people actually give a crap about.
Yeah, and of course, the whole thing is we're starting the season way earlier than normal, or a week earlier than normal, because of the World Baseball Classic. And they always worry about the World Baseball Classic causing injuries. I'm worried it's so cold someone's going to pull a hammy or something.
we don't need that.
They all seem healthy so far. What was that? Sorry.
I think the last thing we need is an injury, especially to anybody who's playing in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, well, except... okay, I'm not going to say anything.
I mean, if Chris Colabello gets hurt, that's fine, but yeah. You know, anybody
there's
else.
A couple guys there who I don't really care about. But yeah, the Indians are sending a lot of starters. So this first week of games is big to me. You guys like Encarnacion and who are joining a team, Austin Jackson, who may or may not make the team. And these guys are going to be here all spring. But Francisco Lindor is not going to be. Roberto Perez is not going to be. So they have to kind of get used to each other quickly here. Within the first week of games before all these guys start heading out. I don't think Andrew Miller being gone is really going to matter. Thanks for
I'm worried about Miller more than I am anybody else. I'm worried about Miller. I think Lindor and Perez and Urshela, those guys will be fine. I'm you know, going to root against the country and say I hope USA gets eliminated quickly so they can come back and just baby Andrew Miller until about mid-July.
But you're talking about injury risk.
Oh, you're talking about team chemistry? Yeah, I'm not really worried about team chemistry, to be honest.
Not necessarily chemistry, just getting used to playing with the other players. Definite thing there with Lonnie Chisenhall and Tyler Naquin last year that showed up in the World Series that they were just not used to playing next to each other. They played next to each other all year, and yet they still couldn't get like that dynamic of what it's like to play next to each other. It's very odd. It's not something that a piece of paper on Baseball Reference, but it's just weird. It's the same thing. Like you see Jason Kipnis do a flip to Lindor, and he knows exactly where the ball is coming. They play very well together, even better with Lindor. Just the way their movements flow, and they know exactly what the other guy is doing. I think there's definitely an importance to that.
So the only thing really that's going to be an issue then is throwing to Edwin for the amount of they already know how to throw to Santana. I guess with Santana not being there, they'll get used to throwing to Edwin at first base. Edwin's going to play probably more first base, and you might see more of Nelly Rodriguez, and I don't know if that's actually a good thing at camp.
No, I think that is a good thing, and I do like that aspect of this, that I'm going to watch all the games on TV. MLB TV is carrying every WBC game, so I'll watch as many as I can. Urshela was probably not going to play a whole lot for the Indians this spring, but he'll play every inning for Colombia because he's their best hitter. They've got almost nothing on that team.
I haven't looked at the roster.
He's pretty much their best hitter, yeah. Quintana, so they have talent. And okay, so their second pitcher is Julio Teheran. So they have two and pretty much nothing else on the roster.
So basically for Quintana, it's going to wind up being like he's on the White Sox. He's going to pitch really well. And if Giovanni Urshela is his best hitter, no one's going to score many runs.
Yeah, it would be like if he was on the White Sox and he had to face Jose Abreu instead of getting to.
Oh, good for him. He's going to do really well there. I guess he'll get to go back real quick and
Abreu's playing with Cuba. No. Abreu's not playing this year because Cuba has a rule where if you don't live in Cuba anymore, you can't play for Cuba. Funny, because I was just looking at the list, the roster for Cuba the other day from 2013. Every single player on that team is now in the major leagues. It's really? Like Yonas Cespedes, Aroldis Chapman, just down the line, major leaguers. Even now lose the name, Ulieski Gurriel.
I think they got.
I'll look up the list, Cespedes, but it's really. What's that?
So I think they have Cespedes' younger brother on that team now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have that roster in front of me. I'm gonna look up the.
I'm looking at the Colombian roster right now, and I recognize one other name besides or two. They have Jorge Alfaro, the Phillies catching prospect. They have Dilson Herrera. Those are the only two names I recognize offensively besides Urshela. So good for him. He's gonna be somebody's best hitter. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So Cuba had Jose Abreu, Rezbil Barrena, who was in the majors for at least a minute. Ulieski Gurriel, Raisel Iglesias, who is apparently the Reds' greatest player ever, all of a sudden, as far as their marketing is concerned, and Yasmani Tomas from Arizona. We're all on the 2013 team and all jumped.
So you actually care about the World Baseball Classic. You're going to watch. You actually care?
I love the game. Arizona, I went to every single game. And it was so much fun. Like, they had Chris DeNorfia playing, Cisco Colabello playing first base, and those are the only two guys you'd ever heard of before.
You know, probably watch, like, I'm not going to follow it like that. I don't know. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say my interest is like a 5. I'm more interested in just keeping the Indians guys healthy, honestly.
Well, yeah, I get that too, and I want to win a World Series more than anything else. But to me, this is entertaining, and I guess I should be rooting for America, right? But I end up rooting for the Indians Classic.
Yeah.
So I love Team Puerto Rico's got 4 Indians on it, so I'm really rooting for them. With Tyler Krieger, don't think I've ever seen him play anywhere. I saw him play a couple. Games at the end of the season in the fall, when his first year, his rookie year, but that was it. So I'm interested to see how he plays against major league talent or near major league talent. That type of stuff is fun to me.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think it's prospects.
The Olympics suck. I hate the Olympics. I've always thought baseball was stupid for the Olympics. It doesn't fit. It's the wrong time of year. They have that amateur distinction, which somehow they broke for basketball, but they won't. And I'm assuming they broke it for soccer, too. I don't follow soccer close enough to know, but I'm guessing that those aren't amateurs.
Well, I mean, basketball, the season's over. It's not a big deal. The only reason they have
it. But the whole point of the Olympics are supposed to be amateur athletes. That's kind of like the idea of it.
Yeah, I guess college kids versus pros, like in the Miracle on Ice. You can get the Miracle on the Dirt.
Yeah, and so, like, does Cuba – I mean, Cuba always sends their national team. It's like Cuba, that is a major league. They're just keeping all their major leaguers in Cuba or trying to. And Japan is a major league, and they're sending all their major leaguers. And then the United States is sending a bunch of, 18-year-olds because – all their best players are already in the majors.
Well, I guess we'll find out in 2020 they're doing it again, or 2018, that next year.
Yeah, and I wrote about that last summer about how I think that's stupid. The World Baseball Classic does it so much better. Although I don't really love that you can play for a team just because your grandmother was born there. That's a little sketchy to me. I think you should have been born there, and maybe I mean, maybe you lose some of these things, but I think maybe parents were born there. Because, like, Jan Gomes' brother was born in the United States, but his parents were born in Brazil. So I think he could play for Team Brazil. I don't think he's good enough to play for Team Brazil, but, I mean.
Really, how good do you think Team Brazil is, considering Jan Gomes and Andre Rienzo are their chief exports?
They lost the qualifiers, but, of course, they didn't have either of those guys because they happened during the season, which is a little unfair because Colombia won their qualifier without Jose Quintana. So that's even more impressive, right?
I guess. I didn't even know they were qualified. Well, I knew there were qualifiers, but I guess it skips my mind because USA never plays in one because I'm not sure what the rules are.
They've only done them twice. The last one was in 2016, and they happened during the baseball season. So it really got overshadowed by everything else. Even like Tyler Krieger stayed in the United States. He didn't go and play for Israel in the qualifier, which was in New York.
Well, that's weird.
The only Indians player who played was Todd Isaacs, played for Great Britain.
Oh, yeah. All right, so.
Which, again, I thought that was fair, but okay.
Have we spent enough time?
To me, Bahamas are. Yeah, I know. I just want to talk geography. I always said the Bahamas are their own country. They're a sovereign nation.
Aren't they under Great Britain rule of the UK or something?
Are they? I don't know. I guess I should have studied that more.
I visited there once. I should know better. I don't know.
I guess.
I think Grand Cayman's a sovereign nation or some sort of UK.
No. They're not their own sovereign nation.
All right, well, we're just sitting here showing off our poor geography skills, so.
Yeah, that's fine. It's better than poor baseball skills.
Yeah. So Michael Braley hit a baseball today in a cage. That's good, right?
Oh, I didn't see that. That's very good.
Yeah, he took 120 swings in a cage. He actually hit real pitched baseballs, not soft toss. He didn't swing at air. He actually hit in an indoor cage with balls being thrown to him at a normal speed. Whatever BP speed is, but 60 miles an hour.
The problem is we're already sitting behind. And now he's actually going to benefit from this extra long spring because you could probably miss a week of spring games and you'll still be at the same level everyone else is because you'll still get that full month in.
I don't think it's going to matter. He's going to start the year with the team anyway.
I hope he does. I don't know. To me, that's kind of pushing it already. I guess amp with Naquin, and then if 2 weeks later Brantley's ready, send Naquin down. Something along those lines. But my hope is that they don't break camp with Naquin. I was hoping that, you know, he'd kind of get left behind.
Well, that would, like we said last week, or 2 weeks ago, that would imply Austin Jackson does something in camp, and it sounds like he's going to be limited to start.
I've seen him hit. I didn't see Brantley hit. I saw Jackson hitting with Encarnacion and Chisenhall the other day. And it's so funny because Chisenhall would come up there and he's pulling everything. But it's like line drives too short right field. Like he wasn't crushing it. He was just pulling everything on a line. And they weren't terrible. I mean, it looks like a major league hitter hitting. And then Encarnacion's coming over there and just hitting these towering fly balls 50 feet beyond the fence and left. And it's like, oh, okay, that's what we had, and that's what we have.
That's what it's supposed to look like.
Like that's what we're used to. I mean, I saw Michael Martinez hit a home run, and I said, well, that was the one for the year. He's done.
And spring training. Well, let's hope if he hits any, it's in Columbus.
It was in batting practice. He hit it out to right.
Oh, wow. Well, we've established just barely a batting practice home run. Good for him.
Yeah, but that's the last one, I think. I think he's done.
No comment.
Somehow
he's still in the mix for this utility job.
This is something I've always wanted to cover, and I've talked to Mike Milleragno about it in the past. What do the Indians value? Valuation system that is so different than everyone else in the world sometimes. Like, how can they go, okay, everybody sees Lindor is the greatest ever. He's a great hitter. He's a great fielder. Like, that's obvious that that's what they were going for. Although when they when they drafted him, their focus was defense, right? It wasn't because he was a great hitter that they drafted him. It was because he was a great fielder and a great athlete. So why then did they play Naquin in the World Series? Like, why did they play Naquin in the last month when he couldn't hit a fastball? Like, what is their evaluation system where they decided that that was a good Naquin out there every day? And what is their evaluation system where you've got Michael Martinez, who has a career negative 2.2 WAR, which I got to do find the math. I looked up the numbers the other day. Is essentially one of the worst hitters in the history of baseball. Like, literally, he's in, like, the worst 200 hitters ever in the history of baseball, going back to the 1800s.
I guess it's like, because he brings enough gloves to play, like, eight positions. That's really what
I
like.
But a lot of guys can do that. But there's so many guys can do that. I mean, Ramirez can do that, and that's a different discussion, I guess. But Eric Gonzalez can do that. He isn't huge, but it's way higher than Michael Martinez's ceiling is. And he's under team control, and he's cheaper, and he's everything. He can also play first base, which Michael Martinez can't. And I don't know why the Indians would need a first baseman, but if they do, he can play it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they need it for one inning. Maybe they're winning 15-0 in the seventh inning, and they want to get Edwin and Carlos both out of the game. Well, then you could put Egon over at first base. I don't know. It just seems like if your value is that you can play multiple positions, a lot of people have that value. Justin Tuohill has that value.
And Gonzalez has options. You know, they went through the trouble to get that fourth option year. You know, you're allowed to do that. I don't know how the rule breaks down, but they went through the trouble to do that. So you have the option, if you're in a roster crunch, you can send Gonzalez down for a pitcher, you know, if the bullpen's shorthanded or something, whereas Martinez, you have to DFA him, and then you're like, okay, well, now what do we do with the backup infield spot? So you have this extra option on Gonzalez, and he's better than Martinez. And why did you go through the extra option here? I guess that's why they did. So they got the ability to send him down. But that just makes me think, like, they want the flexibility.
Yeah, that's completely opposite.
They're trying to keep him down in AAA.
That's completely opposite of what I thought they did it for. I thought they did it because they didn't want him on the team and they would just keep him in AAA.
Well, that's talking about does make sense. I think he's going to go back to AAA and serve his death now because they actually have the option. But the advantage of the option is, okay, we want you as a utility infielder, but you're expendable and on the 40 because you have an option if we need a starter for doubleheader or if we need a reliever or something, you know? So the advantage is actually – or they have an advantage in the option, but it's like – it almost seems like they're not going to use it because they're going to stash them in AAA and not use it.
I mean, you're taking this a step further. He would be my second choice for the utility man job. My first choice would be Yandy Diaz because I actually prefer Jose Ramirez to be the utility man and just have a guy play third base, you know, when Ramirez isn't playing there. But they came out and said that the utility man job was between Martinez and Ronnie Rodriguez, of all people, who has never played in the majors and who he killed the ball with the Dominican this year. But I wouldn't take a whole lot out of that, and he's never been great in the minors as far as a hitter goes. I don't think he's a better defender than Egon, although I haven't seen him live enough to really – I've seen Gonzalez live a bit, but
he's
I haven't really seen Rodriguez that much.
He's not even on the prospect list anymore. Like, Baseball America no longer has him ranked. MLB Pipeline no longer has him ranked. I have no idea where he ended up ranking him, but it's like they've shown no interest in his profile for a couple of years. You know, they put him in aggressive spots. He was 20 and then in Lake County, which is semi-aggressive. But he did 2 years in Double A, and like you said, he's never played a minute in the major leagues, and he's not on the 40-man roster. So where are they going to open up a room for him? Because, I mean, I guess they have, what, Carlos Frias is
there
on the 40.
They can cut. There are always guys you can cut. It just seems an odd move to me. And And part of this is whole thing is, like, they say they – I think one of the reasons they're not counting Yandy is because they want him to play every day, which is one of the most annoying things to me ever. Because to me – and now you probably disagree with this because you're a big Yandy guy, right?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree that you want him to be the utility guy. Yeah. I disagree. Yeah.
But I said the same thing about Jose Ramirez, that I thought – when they brought him up, I was happy because I didn't care about his service time. I was like, yes, bring him up now. Let him play. Let him be exciting. Let him steal bases. Let him hit. Let him defend. And then the next year, they brought him up again, and I wanted him sent down to get a little more seasoning. And then when they brought him back, he was significantly improved. But, you know, I see a lot of these guys. I have a hard time, unless somebody's really better, seeing them as a regular starter necessarily. And I'd much rather a lot of the time get them on the major league roster and see a little bit of what they can do. Worried about, oh, he has to play every single day in AAA for eternity. Like, they're trying to turn Yandy into an outfielder. When I've seen him down here, he's been practicing with the outfielders. I have not seen him play third base this spring. He's been working out with the outfielders. He's over there doing that thing. So, like, that almost says to me they're thinking of him as a starting outfielder.
Right.
In the outfield. That doesn't make it, like, it's not like the outfield is really less crowded than the infield is. You might think that now if you look at the major league team, but when you're looking at Zimmer and Allen and essentially possibly Naquin, you've got Guyer for two more years, I think. You got Chisenhall for another year. You got Brantley for another year after this year. Is there really that much more room in the outfield?
I just think they do want to make him an outfielder. I think they might view him as Brantley insurance. They feel like he's working out with the outfielders because in the event that Brantley doesn't start the season, he's an option to put in left field with some other guys to open the season or whenever – Brantley comes back, or if he doesn't, you know, he's an option out there. I think that's why they don't want to hold him to in the utility competition, because, and they could say, I guess they could always, you know, go back. It's not like saying, you know, he's in the spot for the utility roster on the, you know, the roster spot. They could always say, well, plans change because Brantley's hurt. But I think they view Diaz as somebody who could play left field in the event that Brantley isn't ready, rather than sit him on the bench. I would rather him play every day, but you're right. I don't care about his service time, because if he's one of the best 25 guys you have in the organization, he needs to be on the major league roster because you're trying to win a World Series. And I don't give a crap about his service time because he's 25 years old. When you get to a certain age, service time means crap because, you know, you're 25 years old and the roster's in win now mode.
Yeah, he's going to be on the team during his prime years. Pretty much everybody is going to be – like, they don't have minor leaguers who they're going to bring up who aren't going to be on the team during their prime years. You're really not missing out.
That's my argument for Greg Allen.
Even Zimmer –
and Zimmer both are 25.
Yeah, Zimmer's a college kid. I mean, we've – it's time on some of these guys. They're so slow moving. And obviously, there's a happy medium between what the White Sox do – where they just had to get rid of Sale. They're talking about getting rid of Quintana because they bring these guys up so quickly. They're going to lose Rodon before
he's 28.
Again.
Yeah. But I think your roster situation dictates that. I think because of where the Indians are in terms of contention, you know, it's one thing if they're the White Sox and they're rebuilding or whoever, the Brewers, yeah, you're not going to bring up your best prospects because you're not in win-now
mode. They do.
Mode.
That's the weirdest years. Thing. Like, look at what the Braves did last year.
With Swanson?
Yeah, they bring up Swanson in the middle of the season, in a season that doesn't matter, and he's straight from – it might have been straight from AA, but
it was AA.
He had only played a few games there. He was pretty much from advanced A. He was nowhere near Major League when he was with the Diamondbacks.
And the Diamondbacks probably would still have him in the minors had they not traded him. He might not be up yet.
Absolutely. So they're just killing that service time on years that don't matter. Of course, their whole organization is a little weird the way they've been. I don't know how signing, you know, the oldest pitchers in baseball is really supposed to help you.
To hold off prospects, they don't want to call up, I guess. But
That works out. But like the Twins did something similar a few years ago. They spent a lot more money when they did it, and they signed the guys for a lot longer. And now they're still dealing with the ramifications of those terrible signings of a team that wasn't ready to contend, buying mediocre pitchers who you thought were going to improve and then didn't for a lot of money. And now they're holding back your prospects that you actually do want to start working in. I'll say for one thing, I'm really glad the Indians are not in this stage anymore. I don't even know what to say to Reds fans anymore. I see Reds fans and I'm just like, hey, yeah, I've been there, but I'm not anymore.
The Reds don't even know what direction they're going in. Like, they're trying to rebuild, but they're like, they're still stuck like in rehab mode. They're not even getting up off the bed to start moving.
Their pitching staff is so weird too. And every time a guy fails for a week, they put him in the bullpen. Well, out of the bullpen, so then the relievers, and then you got to find more starters someplace. So their rotation bullpen has been a complete mess the last 2-3 years. Fun hitters, I guess. People like Duvall because he hits home runs. I like Peraza; he's better. And people riff on him for the trades. Yeah, I'm glad they got rid of Phillips because he was taking up space. And I think he may have been a positive win player by the end of the year, but he was going to cost them a lot more because they weren't – like a win or two doesn't matter to them. Yeah, he was taking up innings essentially that should have been played by somebody else.
All right, so what do you think of Brantley? Let's finish that whole thought up. I mean, he took batting practice today, so.
Yeah, I mean, I keep saying it.
It's positive news, right?
On every show I've been on, I've said it. But last year, it must have been about this time, I watched Michael Brantley take live batting practice. I sat next to his cousin and his dad, and the three of us watched him take live batting practice, and he looked great. And he looked healthy, and he didn't have a hitch in his swing, and he played 11 games last year. So until he plays many, many innings in actual games, I'm not buying anything. Okay. I got to see it happen.
I don't think anybody can.
Yeah, but even like he played. I was at his first game last year when he hit a home run, his first spring game. Again, looked perfect. Because it's not a physical thing, it's a pain thing. It's not that he can't do it. It's because he's in pain. And I think Jonah Carey was the one that started that whole rumor of he said he's never going to be the same again, or I don't know if he's ever going to be the same again. Or his wording was something like that. But I don't think that's fair because in those 11 games last year, he was the same hitter. He hit like crazy. I think he even stole a base or two. Like he was playing defense. He did everything he was doing beforehand. So I think he can.
The first two games weren't so good. I think he got a bunch of hits before he went back on the DL. But early in his return, he wasn't.
He was up for 11 games.
Right. So like I think the first like four games.
Talking about having
the first four games, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, but still, he missed all the spring training. To come back and play 11 games at that level was very impressive. I think if he plays, he will be fine. And if he doesn't, we've seen this type of thing happen before, where a guy still has the physical ability to do it but doesn't want to because of the pain. And it happens in football a lot more than anything else. You got guys like Barry Sanders or Megatron a couple years ago. I think it was a couple years ago now, retire at extremely young ages because they're just done. They're tired of getting beat up. Hal Trosky, one of the greatest Indians hitters ever that most Indians fans haven't heard of, and the reason they haven't heard of him was because he retired because he had incredible migraines, and he just couldn't play with the migraines. When he played with them, he still hit because he had them for like the last 3 or 4 years of his career. And he was still hitting with them. He had some great seasons with these intense migraines, but he just couldn't deal with it anymore, so he had to retire. Odell was kind of the same thing too, with the degenerative hip when he played for Baltimore. He was still hitting. It might not have been 95 Bell, but he could still do it. He just couldn't play with the pain. So it's a different thing than we're used to seeing, I think. It's not Grady Sizemore where he physically couldn't go out there and play.
That's exactly what I think, too. I hate people make that comparison to Sizemore because with Sizemore, you know, first it was the knee. Then it was he had a hernia. Then he had an elbow problem. Then he had a back problem. Then he had a groin problem. His whole body gave up on him. Whereas, I mean, people keep referencing this whole degenerative shoulder thing with Brantley. I haven't seen anybody call it degenerative. I think I've heard it on Cleveland Sports Radio, which I wouldn't trust anything they say about baseball for the most part. But
I don't listen to that, so I'll have to take your word for it.
They keep saying the word degenerative shoulder. I'm like, nobody's mentioned that. Even Jonah Carey, who was super pessimistic about Brantley ever being who he was before the injury, you know, in December when he had that interview, didn't use the word degenerative, and everyone keeps mentioning that. And I'm like, well, where did that come from? Because, yeah, it's a bad shoulder injury, but, you know, it comes down to pain management. It comes down to, will his shoulder recover enough to allow him to play through X amount of pain, or if he has to sit a couple of days to recover? Like, you know, Francona's statement last year was, well, I'd rather have Brantley for 4 or 5 games a week and sit him for 3 or something than not have him at all. And that didn't seem to work. But if that does work, that's fine.
I agree
with
that, too. I absolutely agree with that, especially because in the playoffs, you have so many days off. If you can get – and the way their roster is constructed, there's a lot of mixing and moving you can do if you have to. You can play around with things, and if you've got to put Carlos Santana someplace in the field, he's willing at least.
And we know he won't trip over himself trying to catch a fly ball.
Whatever you got to do to get the top 9 hitters in the lineup every day.
Right.
That's essentially the goal. And Brantley is in the top 9 hitters, so you figure out what you got to do to get him in there. And if he can't be in there any day, then you pick your spots and you put him in there in the most important days in pitching if you want to. You know, like, just pick the ones you want him to face. But he should be out there if he's physically able. If
and
he's
that's
not,
why it's important to have guys usually, like
this. Yeah, although, I mean, Bradley Zimmer could come up just as easily and play center field and
Yeah, well, I mean, he could play center field better than anybody in the organization not named Greg Allen, which he's not. That's interesting. Tomorrow, Greg Allen, I know it's, you know, it's spring training, it's game one, but Greg Allen's playing center and Zimmer's playing right tomorrow.
You know what was weird is I always thought Allen was the better defender, and in the AFL, Allen was playing right almost every game and Zimmer was playing center.
I don't think
very
that's
often
a lot of
they
have it either.
In the AFL?
No, I think a lot of people do view Allen as the better defender and center.
We're trying Zimmer. My impression it was leaving on me during the fall league was that the Indians told the Mesa Solar Sox, hey, we want Zimmer to play center field next year for us. Play him in center field. Was on the team, and they were, well, he's got to play someplace, so let's put him in right or left. And that was my impression. It wasn't that this AFL team is trying to win. It was we are trying to make sure Zimmer can play center field.
And I think he can. I just don't think he can play it as good as Greg Allen, and Zimmer can play it fine. It's just I think Greg Allen's that much better of a center fielder. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. And of course, Gabriel Mejia is better than all of them, except he can't throw with a shit.
Is arm that important in center field? Like Grady Sizemore had
no.
A terrible arm. Coco Crisp had a terrible arm. Kenny Lofton's arm was
obviously that's always
okay.
Well, if you think about it, it's the farthest throw, so you're probably not going to get the guy out anyway.
Right.
I think that's generally why they don't care about arms in center field. And I won't say Mejia's the greatest center fielder because I've seen him make some major mistakes, but he's so fast it usually doesn't matter. He'll run in on a ball that he should run in. He's just also super fast.
I don't think he's as, I mean, no one's as fast as Mejia. I'm just saying Greg Allen is quick and he makes, takes good routes to the ball, whereas Mejia's just got a stupid amount of speed and can make up for any bad routes.
Yeah, he's also really young, and I think he's going to improve over time. I think it ultimately you're probably looking at Allen as the best center fielder in the Indians system.
I agree. That's why at some point this year I'd rather see him than Naquin.
That's another tough one, and that's something I'm going to take out of spring. Normally, you don't want to take too much out of spring games because they are exhibitions, and a lot of times the starting pitcher pitches one or two innings, and then there are a bunch of minor leaguers in there. But one thing I'm really going to be paying close attention to is Naquin and his defense and his at-bats and see if he's made the improvements that he needs to have made. And if he did, there's no reason why he can't be a contributor to this team still. But if he's going to play like he did in August, September, October, November, if he's going to play like that, then he can't even be a fourth outfielder. There's no point.
It's such a weird situation because he was so good. I mean, you look at his overall numbers. You know, if you just scout the stat line, he had a terrific year. And now everyone's talking about, like, should he be on the team? Is he good enough to be on the 25-man roster as a starter or in general? But, I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody truly knows who you're going to see, who Tom Naquin's going to be. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was at the end of the year. Obviously, he's not going to be as good as he was up until July.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could talk about, like, batting average on balls in play helped him early on, but when you're striking out, that doesn't even affect it. And his strikeout rate increased by so much that was – his problem. It had nothing to do with like a regression based on luck. And I do think he could.
Right. If he,
I don't think his batting average on balls in play was that unsustainable. It was unsustainable by like 30 points, but it wasn't unsustainable by like 100 points, which I think a lot of people thought it was.
I think if he put the ball in play more, it would have normalized it. I mean, it was 414. That's ridiculously high. Or I think it was 411 maybe.
Yeah, and if I remember, I did write something on this last year where I was looking up the highest ever. And, like, I'm thinking it was Christian Yelich of the Marlins has like a career batting average on balls in play of about 375.
Jeez.
So there are some guys who keep it up in that range and have done it for multiple years.
Yeah, well, Christian Yelich makes a heck of a lot better contact and more consistently. Naquin's wouldn't have been that high had he made more contact.
Yeah, Austin Jackson was one that I looked up recently where in his like first two or three years, he was having a 350, 360, somewhere around there, batting average on balls in play every year. It's a component of speed and hitting for line drives too, not just pure luck. And I think at least Naquin does have that ability. You know, just to hit gap shots. He can do it. Again, he can do it. We'll see if he actually does do it.
Well, I'm excited to see Allen play center field tomorrow and not Naquin, for sure.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, that's the only real live game action you get to see. The practices are so – the outfield practice, it's so hard to – do that because you know the ball is coming to you. In a game, you could go five innings and not have a ball come to you. In practice, you know exactly when they're going to hit it to you. So even if you don't know whether they're going to hit it to your right or to your left or in front of you or behind you, you still know it's coming to you. So you're more prepared for that moment. It's nice to actually see live game action. And that's why I always take defense more than anything else out of these games. Pitchers aren't ready yet. Most of them aren't even throwing more than like a fastball and change the first week. They're not ready yet because they haven't faced real life pitching for more than a couple pitches. They've been hitting off machines and coaches from 60 feet away or 50 feet away. So, yeah, you know, it's nice. But defensively, they're pretty much ready. So I take that much more seriously than the other things.
Yeah, you can get a good read on like how a guy naturally reacts to a ball hit his way right away and his ability to make a read.
Have you seen Lindor's infield warm-up routine? I did post a video on it, but it probably wasn't very good.
I don't think I've seen it. No, I've seen the flat glove. That's about it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I saw a picture of
how he uses that glove. It's pretty entertaining. Because obviously the glove doesn't have a pocket in it, so you can't catch the ball. So the idea is just to handle the ball with your throwing arm rather than trying to catch it and then transfer it. So, and of course, usually he uses it very fundamentally sound, where he's still like grabbing the ball while it's still in the glove, essentially. But sometimes he has fun with it, and he did some of the most incredible things you'll ever see with that thing. Just like barely tipping it with the glove and grabbing it in midair and throwing it to second. That type of those type of moves are just incredible. One of them, the coach mishit the ball and was like, oh man, I'm going to do it again. And as soon as Lindor realized that he was going to get another one, he ran up, barehanded it, and threw it behind his back to second. Perfect throw. So he's so much fun to watch practice or games or whatever, but I think the work he's doing with that glove will definitely help him, if anything. Maybe he's just got it already, so it doesn't matter, but
I was gonna say, what can he improve on?
Well, his throws to first. But
right, that's really about it. It's just his throws.
Yeah, and I don't even mind. He gets to the ball so fast, and he releases it so fast that I noticed, especially when I put together the highlight reel. I think last year I did a highlight reel of top 10 just Lindor plays, and I noticed that almost all of his great plays, he bounces the throw to first. And I think he does it intentionally, because if you bounce it about 10 feet away, you get a true bounce, and the first baseman can catch it easier that way. Whereas if you bounce it an inch in front of the first baseman, he's probably going to miss that. And where he's bouncing it, I think he's doing it intentionally. He just does it so consistently, and he has so much time, he can do that. He can have a weaker throw and bounce it in there. And he was doing it in practice too, where he's regularly bouncing that throw to first base. And I mean, if this one is used to it, there's nothing wrong with that. He's still beating the runner there.
Yeah, I guess he's you can't doubt his baseball IQ, which I guess is what New Balance is counting on for him to be the face of their baseball brand, which is going to be odd. I don't know. New Balance doesn't strike me as a young person's kind of apparel, but I guess that's why they're
going to take this as an insult.
Do you wear New Balance?
For us old men with arthritis, it's the best type of shoe when you're walking around all day.
Is Francisco Lindor going to make you buy more New Balance gear?
No, I already have mine.
So if anybody with arthritis no. then doesn't care, they already have it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Well, he's trying to sell to the kids. I saw him filming his – or I don't know if he was doing just a photo shoot. The Indians dugout the other Thursday when I was there. And they were doing a photo shoot, and they had all sorts of, like – wasn't really baseball attire necessarily. They did have some cleats, but just, like, shirts and shorts and stuff like that. Not – it was not, like, a baseball jersey and – pants and stuff where he's playing a game. It was more of the, I don't know, exercise gear, that type of stuff.
I just thought it was an odd.
He deserves
an odd match.
I'll root for him to make his money wherever he can. Years ago they were always talking about how LeBron James made more money from Nike than he did from the Cavs by tenfold. I don't know the exact numbers, but he made tons more money from Nike than he did from the Cavs. And that's because the Cavs aren't allowed to pay him more than a certain amount. Michael Jordan made most of his money from Gatorade and Nike. I like that. He needs to make his money. He's not going to make it in baseball right now because the Indians don't have to pay him more than $600,000, so they're not going to pay him more than $600,000, which is, annoys me, because to me, they should be signing him to an extension right now. Like, you know he's going to be the face of your franchise for the next, if the next decade, if you can have him. Sign him now. Give him the money now.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they haven't.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that hasn't been a conversation yet. Like, no one's even mentioned, like, that might happen at some point.
Yeah, they at the beginning of the offseason, they said there were, the two extension candidates were who was it? It was Lindor and one other guy, and I can't. Ramirez? It wasn't Salazar, because to me, no, it wasn't Ramirez. It was a pitcher. It may have been Cody Allen.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But to me, the top guys should have been, like, Salazar should be number one, number two, and that's not about importance. That's about years of control coming up. I mean, Salazar's going to be a free agent first, so you want to lock him up. Especially, to me, coming off an injury, if you could guarantee a guy money coming off an injury, you should be able to guarantee him a lot less, which is what they did with Carrasco. I mean, their contract with Carrasco is straight thievery.
Yeah.
So to me, that's what you should be doing. And people will go, well, look what happened with Travis Hafner, and look what happened with Grady Sizemore. But just like you wrote, was it last week or whatever, you wrote that article about Grady Sizemore. He just earned it before he got it.
Right, you're paying for that talent years past, that's all.
Yeah, usually in baseball, usually in life, I guess, right, you earn your money as you earn it. Like, you're getting the amount of money you deserve when you're getting it. But in baseball, they cheap out on you for the first, let's say, 4 years you're in the minors, and then 4 years or so you're in the majors. They're pretty cheap with you. I mean, you get a lot more. You get 10 times more, at least. But they're still being cheap with you. And then all of a sudden, you're 30, and you're not as good as you were when you were 22. But now you get paid because you can. And it's a backward system. So you have to. Yeah, so you have to be okay when guys like Sizemore and Hafner get those big paychecks and then don't play that well because you paid them nothing while they were playing incredibly.
Some people call that stealing money.
And Corey Kluber's never. Yeah, Corey Kluber is never going to get a big payday. Pretty much threw that away when he signed that extension. And I love him for it. I mean, it's very selfless of him because he could have not done that.
Well, I think by the time he was a free agent, his age was going to be an issue.
Yeah, but now it's going to be even more of an issue. Which hopefully, to me, I hope he stays in Indians for life. I love guys who stay with the same team their whole career. I've yet to see an Indian do it. No Indian has done it significantly since Feller. I really don't think there's been an Indian who played significant years for the team and played his entire career in Cleveland since Feller. Rafael Perez did, but he was only like 4 years or maybe a couple more. It might have been more than that, but Perez was the most recent guy who had more than like three seasons.
And why should
Sizemore was
Lindor to be that one?
Well, see, I've been making the case for Jason Kipnis for like 3 or 4 years now, but I think you could make 4 or 5 guys. Honestly, I think you could lock them up for good, just like the Twins did with Mauer. You know, you can pick guys. The Reds with Votto. You can definitely do it with one for sure. You could possibly do it with more guys. Of course, you're not going to do it all in one contract, but I think Kluber's may end up being the perfect one. Because they've got him signed through at least through his early 30s. They could probably get him to keep coming back on one-year deals after that. Or maybe sign a 2 or 3 year deal towards the end. And I could definitely see him being a guy. And I'd love to see Lindor be another one.
I think at all costs they should do it for Lindor, especially given his age right now. He's one of the youngest players on the team.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons they may not be doing it this year is because of the Encarnacion thing. And I wrote a piece on this. I called it, I think, the Encarnacion effect on Carlos Santana. And my point was, I think they said, okay, next year we can spend $20 million on a first baseman. We can bring back Carlos Santana for $20 million, or we can get a different first baseman for $20 million. And they were like, well, why don't we just say goodbye to Santana after the season and just get the other guy now? First baseman coming up next year. So let's just get him now, and we'll keep him longer than Santana and let Santana go. Because that's essentially what I saw with the signing of Encarnacion, is let's have this juggernaut. Let's have this crazy punch in the middle with Santana and Encarnacion, maybe Brantley, all together at once.
For at least a year.
Figure out what to do after. Yeah, and then the next year we'll figure out what to do without Santana. But to me, that signing of Encarnacion was essentially saying, we're not bringing back Santana. But that also frees up $17 or so million next year if they want to keep the payroll at the same.
Right, and that's going to wind up being your hopefully your contract extensions and some arbitration.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So you bring back – I mean, Shaw's gone too, so that's going to be another $4 million or so. There are a couple things where you're going to save some money, and I think you give that money to Lindor. You give that money to Salazar. You try to find out someone else who could play first base.
I think Cody Allen's probably out the window at this point.
Yeah, I do too. And I think Miller is too. And it's sad because they're both gone at the same moment. And because of them, they haven't really developed any other bullpen talent recently. Like, there's a lot of guys who last year, you would have seen Sean Armstrong, Joe Colon, Percy Gardner. You would have seen those guys throw 20, 30 innings last year.
Right.
Instead, they came up in September and pitched a couple times because they didn't suck.
That's why they traded Ben Heller. Otherwise, they would have had Ben Heller and J.P. Fireyce in the same breath.
Yeah, absolutely. So then next year, you're like, this 2017, you're like, well, I don't know if we can use these guys because we've never seen a pitch. So now you got to work them in slowly again, and they probably aren't going to get very many innings, even if they make the team from time to time. And then you're going to come up on 2018, and you're going to be in the same situation in 2019, and all of a sudden you're going to be like, oh, we don't have Miller or Allen anymore, and now we don't know who's going to be able to pitch because we didn't try that out.
You got to earmark some of that money to go buy a reliever, which for the Indians to go out and spend.
Which is really stupid.
Right, it is for the Indians. I mean, they're getting
– buying a reliever is the stupidest thing you can do. It's almost always better off bringing up someone from below than to buy somebody new in the history of baseball. It's so dumb to buy relief pitching.
It is.
But training course different.
They are in a few years. I mean, you got guys like Aaron Civale and Shane Bieber and maybe Ben Crouth is my favorite. A better bullpen arm.
Yeah. I love Ben Crouth. He's short. He's left-handed. He throws 90 miles an hour at his highest, and he throws nothing but strikes, and he's the anti-Rafael Betancourt because he gets the ball and he throws the ball. There's no goofing around. There's no 10 minutes between pitches. He gets the ball and he throws it, and he throws a strike, and they still can't hit it.
So maybe they do have some relievers.
He really impressed me last year. Well, they have them. The point is you don't know what they do in the majors. It's the same thing we talk about Yandy Diaz. Like, maybe Yandy Diaz is ready for the majors. Maybe he could start this year and play a utility role where he's playing two times a week. And he would – I would say definitely he'd be better than Michael Martinez. Maybe he'd be better than Eric Gonzalez. Maybe he'd be better than Austin Jackson. But we don't know, so they won't do it.
I think the roster will dictate it. I think right now they're just trying to make sure that he's – got a role somewhere where he can play often enough. And I think they'll adjust if they realize that Brantley's not going to be on the big league roster. Maybe that's a change. And it depends on who. Maybe Austin Jackson's terrible. You know, maybe they can't break camp with him. Maybe they send Almonte back to AAA, you know, because he's got an option too.
Well, I think Almonte's on this team sink or swim.
I think so too. I'm just going through scenarios that could happen for Yandy to break camp, and I think they're just trying to leave their options open with him.
you're trying to go so deep into the thing that you can get Diaz on this team. But what I'm saying is I don't think they want that. I think if Jackson had a terrible spring out and you need another outfielder, I still think it's Jackson. I still think they go with him over everybody else because he's got major league experience. And I think that's actually the right move.
I agree.
Team and you're ready to win now. It sucks for a month to get rid of him. I mean, it took him too long to get rid of Uribe last year. They did the right thing. You know, they've proven that they don't, other than Michael Martinez, ever they'll get rid of you eventually.
Well, at least Martinez is not on the 40-man roster. I think that at least makes it an uphill battle for him to be back.
Giambi wasn't, and they still brought him back.
Those are two different cases.
I never thought they were going to bring I don't. Giambi was so terrible, though.
And Tito did love
terrible, him. And he struck out. Like, in spring, I think he had, like, one hit in the entirety of spring training that year, and he struck out in almost every single bat, and they still put him on a roster, and they still kept trying to bring him back. And I'm Giambi when he was playing well. So I certainly didn't like him when he was playing poorly.
Yeah, he had like two big home runs, and that was about his career as an Indian. Those two home runs against the White Sox.
Yeah, but that was the year before. I'm talking about the year after that.
Oh, you're talking about 2014. Oh, well, yeah, that was not a great year.
He was terrible, and they brought him back as a minor league invite. They did not put him on the 40 until the season began, and then they decided to bring him in. And that's what I'm afraid of with Martinez. Just like Mike Avila's. I never took as much flack for anybody as I did for my dislike of Mike Avila's. And it was similar. I think Mike Avila's is better than Michael Martinez. I'd much rather have Mike Avila's on this team right now than Michael Martinez. There's no question. So we ended up getting a worse option. Saying, why don't they just cut him and pay him the rest of his salary for the rest of the year? Or pay him twice as much, or give him $10 million, just get him off the roster. Why does he need to be on the roster? Sir, I never got more hate than I did for saying that stuff back then. But it's just because I want the top 25 men on the team. Yeah.
They got rid of Chris Johnson, no problem.
There for like 2 days.
Right. All right, well. The first spring training game is tomorrow. I guess we'll find out more after we watch a game, as much as you can take from one game besides
defense. Yeah, and we'll probably show in a week or two and with some better updates of what's actually going on.
Yeah, and plus tons of
World Baseball Classic stuff.
Oh, well, I'll let you talk about that. I'm going to just listen because I'm going to watch like 50% of the games, if that.
Actually, that doesn't even start for 2 weeks.
Oh, we can't even do it next week, yeah. Time. Either way, I'm just going to say I'm rooting for Team USA to lose early.
Okay, I'm rooting for Team Puerto Rico and Team Israel, and then Team USA. That's my third team.
That works for me.
So
I'm on
go Tribe, go Israel.
Team Puerto Rico. Even though I'm not Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. All right.
You don't have to be.
We'll get back, and I guess you don't. Yeah, I guess we've proven that. You don't have to be from there to care or play for them, apparently. I can go play for Team Ireland, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess that's it for episode 2. We'll reconvene in a week or two and have better things to talk about than the World Baseball Classic and Michael Martinez and all that good stuff.